Hello and welcome to Weekly Beats, your musical podcast of wonderment and revelry. My name is Charlie.
Do you want to take the lead on this one this week?
Well, I mean, like, is that like a problem? Or
do you want to be Charlie this week?
You got like some sort of like, do you think you own this? You think you own?
I mean, I could be Mark. That's fine.
This is my world.
Yes. Hello and welcome to Weekly Beats, the podcast in which two guys give you their perspective on the week in music. My name is Charlie.
My name is Mark. And I'll be your...
No, Mark. My turn now. You sit in your corner.
I'll be your tour guide.
This week on the show, we're talking about The National, whose album Sleep Well Beast is finally out in our ears. Gonna dig into that thing. We will also be dissecting the biggest hit on the Hot 100 for the week. Thank you, Billboard, for supplying us with some new Taylor Swift. The long-awaited discussion of Look What You Made Me Do, music video included, will come in the second half of the show. And we've got a whole lot of other stuff we listened to this week, including Always and Death From Above 1979 and The Killers and whatever else Mark listened to. So it's sure to be a stuffed episode. It's been a while since the two of us have gathered around the microphones. Mark, how have you been in the day since I last seen you?
It's been hotter than usual.
It really has, I gotta say. Whoever switched off the air conditioning for the fall season, you got that all wrong, man. It should be way cooler this time of year.
So when you say whoever shut off the air conditioning, you're talking about man-made climate change.
Right. If we could do like a Snowpiercer kind of thing where we introduce a chemical or an apparatus to our global atmosphere that cools the temperature, sending us into a second or third or whatever it is, ice age, that would be ideal. I want to live on a train. It's always been a dream of mine to live on a train. So if we could just get to that like post-apocalyptic future as soon as possible, that would be ideal.
Okay, well, I mean, I've been watching a lot of PUBG streams, so I could start, like, let's get on a plane together and let's do it, you know?
No, it needs to be a train. I don't care about planes. Planes are meaningless to me. I need a train.
Okay. Well, being in Amsterdam, we're pretty close to a train yard, and honestly, I think we could take it over.
Like an uprising?
Like a revolution, Charlie.
Okay, okay.
Now this is my world!
Are you Chris Evans' character?
No, I'm the baby that they eat.
Oh, no.
Before the movie starts.
No, too soon.
Too soon, it hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
You're the one's gonna eat me.
Spoilers for some movies, but why did everyone get mad when they ate the baby in Mother, but not when they ate the baby in Snowpiercer?
They ate a baby in Mother?
Oh, spoilers. See, you should have seen that movie.
Oh, I screwed up that one. Is that the whole movie? Is that why they're so surprised?
Everyone is breaking it down to just that, but it's way more than that.
Really?
Hot take. Hot take. Mother's one of the best films of the year.
Wow. I haven't seen a lot of... I know that you love it. I haven't seen a ton of high praise for it.
Yeah, because people are idiots.
You know, I can't disagree with that. So is it just a movie where it's like an hour and a half of a baby being eaten alive? Is the baby alive when they eat it?
Yes. And screaming and kicking the whole way down their throats.
Wow. That sounds horrible.
It's horrifying. One of the most disturbing things I've ever seen in my entire life. No question. Five stars.
In your whole life?
Yes. In my entire life.
That includes that one weekend we had together?
Yes. I said my entire life, Mark. I meant what I said. I'm surprised you haven't seen it yet. I told you like a month ago to go and see it.
So?
What are you doing? Why does your life
I'm living my own life.
My commands?
I'm a grown man. This is the episode where I am going to overthrow you.
It's starting off very antagonistically, I gotta say. This is not how I expected us to come back in.
For too long, Charlie has been at the top of the podcast game.
Not
where,
anymore.
Well, us
bourgeoisies,
is sitting down here at the bottom. And it is quite frankly unfair.
Well, you know what they say about September? In like a lamb, out like a angry bourgeoisie mob.
I don't remember that saying.
Okay. Well, you know who else is in like an angry bourgeoisie mob is The National on their latest album, Sleep Well Beast. This is, I believe, their, what, sixth or seventh album?
I think it's actually their first album.
Okay. Their debut album. Here they are, The National, ready to sing their hearts out for us about grown, full adult depression, drinking wine by yourself, empty houses with no lights on. They are the kings of hanging out in that zone. Let's set things up for the people, Mark. How big of a National fan are you?
I like
and by
National.
A National fan, I mean like a patriot. Like, how much do you care about this great nation of ours?
Like a 10. I love it.
Okay, how about the band, The National?
Like a 10. I love it.
Oh, okay. You understand the difference between those two things? They're not the same thing?
What? You're saying that that this country isn't a really sad thing? Where the album where it's just a man who's really sad?
A really mopey white guy drinking too much wine by himself?
That has been my experience of the country so far, so I mean, kind of assuming that's what it is.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not necessarily wrong. Wine, maybe not. Some other kind of alcoholic beverage, but at least intoxicated.
Well, you know, you drink your boozles, and I'll do my doozles.
Okay, that's what they all say. What do you think about The National, the band, Mark?
10 out of 10.
Okay, good. I'll say that The National has not been one of my favorite groups. I think they're someone that I appreciate and admire, but not one that I put on to feel good about myself. You know, I like the up-tempo tracks. You know, I like a party jam. And while The National certainly have their share of uplifting and up-tempo tracks, I find a lot of their stuff to be pretty depressive, pretty heavy, unless it's raining outside. I don't really feel like I ever get in The National kind of mood. Usually for me, it's either like a cold, crisp fall morning, which we still have yet to have this year, and maybe a really rainy, cold May morning. But other than that, there's really no ideal time for me to listen to The National. I'm not a huge fan of the previous stuff, so I don't have the history with these guys. Don't have a whole lot of stakes coming into Sleep Well Beast. But I gotta say, on the whole, I do find this album pretty enjoyable. There are some tracks that are certainly worth listening to. I think the flow of this album works really well, especially in the first half. They do a great job of balancing a brooding, slower track, and they follow it up with a more up-tempo, brisker song. I like the way that bounce back and forth flows for at least the first half of things here. I don't know that this album has really stayed with me in the weeks after. I've listened to a lot of other stuff, and I haven't found the need to go back to it. But there are some definite high points on this thing that I think any fan of this band is going to really enjoy, especially if you're a fan of these moments where a really deep-voiced man is going to whine to you about his personal life. And I mean that in the best way.
Wow. Can I delay this review just like a little bit longer?
Sure.
Okay. So you said something that you said a lot of interesting things about whatever you're saying, but you kind of said something that caught my eye. You said you don't listen to The National to feel good about yourself.
No.
What do you listen to that makes you feel good about yourself?
Everything. I listen to Ariana Grande a whole lot. It gives me really positive vibes. Makes me feel good about myself. Beyonce, also great for me feeling good about myself, you know, that positive empowerment kind of thing. Billy Joel is a great uplifting positive voice. You know, he was a down and out kind of guy, but he came back with his piano skills, danced along those ivory and ebony keys, and here we are now. And yeah, you know, I tend to channel the musical stylings of my favorite artists inward and see myself in their songs.
Wow. And it makes you feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I'm killing it right now, man. My life is so good. I am so good at what I do. I am the best.
I don't care who Jay-Z has sex with. I know I am the greatest female pop singer ever to live.
Definitely.
Cool.
I feel like I have a child with Jay-Z now because I listen to Beyonce.
Yeah.
In fact, I feel like I have three children with Jay-Z, two of which are twins.
Maybe you should trademark them for marketing purposes.
No, that would be crazy.
Though
I am disappointed that the twins aren't carrying their latest album from Beyonce titled Gemini. I foresaw that would happen and did not come to be. So I'm upset. Yes.
It's like one of them is a record.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Very Beyonce stunt to pull.
Just a live stream of the bird.
This is my record, y'all. I've been carrying it in utero for the past 9 months. It's been gestating inside me.
Wow. Just covered in juice, human juice.
And you have to throw it on immediately or else it gets ruined by the impurities of the world.
It's just like wet. It's like all warped. It doesn't sound right in the record player.
But no, that's the way it's supposed to sound. It's not of this world.
Mm-hmm.
It's supernatural.
Like an Arca track.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's actually how Arca makes music. Is he puts a Beyonce song into Beyonce and gestates it. And then
births it.
Listen to it. Yes.
You must birth the music before you can listen to it. Arca said that quote in that great interview a couple months back.
I've been thinking that we need to actually change up what our description is on iTunes, and I think that's going to be it.
Yeah.
You need to birth the music to enjoy it.
Arca, 2017. It needs to be wet. It must be wet to be enjoyed.
That's some scary stuff right there.
Yeah, tell me about it. Speaking of scary moments, were you scared by The National at all on this record?
No, I wasn't. I was pretty surprised. You know, I don't really know that much about The National. I like everything I've listened to. I like Fake Empire, that song. And I was surprised to hear how much they're up-tempo on Sleep Well Beast, considering the band and the imagery in the album art.
Yeah. I mean, they start off...
to hear Day I Die.
Oh, let's talk about it. But first, I mean, they do definitely start off on a slow plotting point here. With the track Nobody Else Will Be There, very slow moving, lethargic pace, in line I think with a lot of their previous stuff. But man, the second track on here kicks into high gear, Day I Die. Tell me this is not a highlight for you on this record, man.
It is, actually.
Aw, yeah.
The answer is yes.
Let's hear it. Man, you know, it's so up-tempo, but the central message is so deeply depressing and upsetting, but it's a beautiful, sublime combination there, man. I love the way the song kicks into gear. That central question of some person at the maybe crossroads of a relationship of trying to figure out, are we going to last or are we going to lose ourselves? And the central question of the chorus there is, the day I die, where will we be? Asking, you know, when this life is said and done, will we still be together? Will you be there beside me, or will you be off in your own separate world, not even concerned about who I am or what's going on? You know, that's a powerful existential musing that's happening here. And I think the music that's accompanying it is just monster. It's super good. I love this track.
Yeah, not at all a vibe that I would expect. I mean, like I said, I don't know a ton about the band, but I've always gotten the impression that as a group, they're what they tend to focus on and the sort of darker, more, you know, sort of sad and melodic things that they tend to write about tend to be more cosmic kinds of sadness that they explore.
Yeah.
Like kind of like the question raised in Day I Die. But I also kind of feel like this album, first of all, that song sounds almost like a Jimmy Eat World track. Like there's something about the just so lightly emo, but like 80% upbeat. You know what I mean? And at the same time, I feel that this track's a touch more personal. It feels a little bit more direct than what I, at least from my brief experience, have come to expect from the group.
Yeah. Certainly what I was not expecting on the second track on this album. I was reading some critiques of the song, some people saying the chorus was too simplistic, too repetitious, but I gotta disagree with those folks, and I think that really hammers home the importance of the message and the constant pounding it is in the speaker's mind throughout this thing. I mean, that's at the forefront of his thoughts throughout here. He doesn't know what's going on, and, you know, that mismatch of that searching question with the what feels ultimately like an up-tempo rock track here is, I think, really compelling.
Yeah, and I kind of like that transition. I kind of like the straightforward rock nature of the song, because I feel like the depth that comes into the song is all coming from his vocal performance and what it is thematically.
Yeah,
and I've always really liked that, like you said, that juxtaposition. I always really like the sense that there is a sort of, I don't know, bipolar nature to a track where the track is energetic and urgent and its message is defeated. Mm-hmm. I think that's actually a way more common emotion people have than is represented in a lot of art. And I like when songs are able to capture it.
Well, yeah, certainly the disillusionment of like hope and the failing of dreams in the face of, you know, age of adult responsibility, of failed relationships, you know, that's the stuff these guys have made their bread and butter off of. And Matt Berenger with his deep baritone vocals is like the living embodiment of those ideas. You know, his voice is the exact sound that you want to tap into those feelings. And they've done it forever, and they've continued to do it, I think, well on this record. I do think it's impressive that they're not necessarily changing their sound up tremendously on this thing. You know, this is, for all intents and purposes, a national record, and there are some new bells and whistles they affixed to their ship, mostly in the electronic production, some synth work they've got going on here, less guitar-driven than some previous records. But, man, they've kind of just stayed the course for the past, you know, decade they've been active. It's been pretty consistent, I guess more than a decade now.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I'm not the foremost expert on these guys either, but from what I listen to of past records, they've kind of always existed in this space. The big single off this record is The System Only Dreams in Total Darkness, which I think is another one of those, if we're going, say, Nobody Else Will Be There is the soft track, and then the loud track is Day I Die, Walk It Back is the soft track, and then we bounce back with another loud track, The System Only Dreams in Total Darkness. This was one that was out several months ago, I think right before summer had started, and really enjoyed this one because this is the first time we get a guitar solo from The National. It's the first time they've ever given their guitarist the time to step into the spotlight and play a little ditty. And while it's not the most technically impressive guitar solo I've ever heard, there's something really satisfying about hearing that riff in the middle of this track that is, again, an up-tempo but dramatic piece here. What do you think about this one, Mark?
I don't remember.
Let's play a little bit. System Only Dreams in Total Darkness. Pretty straightforward as far as rock tunes go, but again, I think it's a solid performance here. I like this track a whole lot too.
Yeah, it's got a lot of the piano stuff that I feel like is pretty much par for the course with them too, right?
Yeah. And that harsh guitar riff going on in the background, I like that a whole lot.
Yeah. What a fun and good time. I mean, just like a real party kind of jam, you know?
I don't know what the lyrics mean, though. I don't understand what they're coming from with The System Only Dreams in Total Darkness.
I'm going to have to say that it's the first draft of the Washington Post's Democracy Dies in Darkness tagline.
Okay.
They took like a real, real defeatist approach for a minute before they pivoted.
Yeah, that's pretty depressing.
I mean, that's life for you, Charlie. It's a depressing world out there.
Life is a grown-up.
Life's a highway. and you're going to crash and you're going to die. And if you don't, you're going to get pulled over for speeding. If you're not speeding, you're never going to get to where you want to go.
The song itself does tend to concern itself with a lot of other relationship issues, it seems. Some of the lyrics here, maybe I listen more than you think, and I can tell that somebody sold you. We said we'd never let anyone in. We said we'd only die of lonely secrets. System only dreams in total darkness. Why are you hiding from me? We're in a different kind of thing now. All night you're talking to God. Again, we get the idea of a broken relationship here where the two aren't communicating as well as they used to. So maybe the system only dreams in total darkness is the idea that this relationship we have here is really only a pure and beautiful thing whenever we don't acknowledge it. We don't reflect on it.
Wow, that's a pretty sad idea. I was thinking that it was maybe a sort of from the outside perspective of the breakdown of the relationship between Serge Tankian and Darren from System of a Down.
Yeah, I like that reading a whole lot. Mm-hmm. We should check out Darren's lyrics, which probably says something like, liar, liar, why were you a liar? I am not a liar. You really suck.
Yeah.
That song is called Liar.
It's the most loneliest day of my life.
The most loneliest. I do think there are a couple misses on this thing. For me, a big miss is actually the track Turtleneck. Which
really?
I think a lot of folks are into this one from what I've seen and read. But the sort of punk energy in this thing doesn't really work for me. The idea of making an intensely emotional track called Turtleneck, I think, is pretty rad. And if there's a band out there more appropriate to write a song called Turtleneck, I think The National would be them.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, the emotions here don't really work for me. The musicality of it doesn't really work for me. I find it to be kind of limp in the track listing here.
I don't know. I like Turtleneck. I think that maybe some of these, I guess I could see some of these tracks maybe getting lost because there's such a ping pong nature to the way that the flow of the album works from here's a pretty standard kind of bummer of a thing where I'm going to really just lay into, hey, thanks for coming over. I've been depressed recently and I wrote a poem. Would you sit here and listen to it? And then going to like taking that guy to a party.
Yeah.
And then you go to a party with that guy and it's a good time, but you still know he's sad. So you're on the drive back. He's like, I wrote a poem actually in the bathroom at that party. I didn't actually have a good time.
It's about my turtleneck.
Yeah. So like I can see Turtleneck maybe being, I don't know, you're getting bounced around a lot back into that. And it doesn't say a lot of new things or interesting things versus all the other moments on the album. But I think there is a really catchy, I think their ability to write really catchy guitar riffs stands out on Sleep Well Beast more than it has for me on other albums.
Yeah.
And I am totally willing to let a track like Turtleneck sink in and just enjoy that. It reminds me of it reminds me of another band.
Remember. Yeah, of course. Let's play a little bit of Turtleneck. Maybe it'll remind you. Yeah, there's something about the sort of sing-songy nature of the chorus that that kind of reminds me of like the centerfold tune. Lyrically or melodically, it has nothing in common with whatsoever, but just the sort of like camp song, everyone's got their mug in their hand, swinging it back and forth.
Yeah.
Lyrically, I don't know that it does a whole lot for me.
Before you dive into that, can I just quickly point out, I feel like there's another track on here. I might go through it right now to try to find it.
Okay.
Where I feel like there's almost a Blink-182 riff in it.
Okay.
Like, I feel like I'm definitely here. I don't know if that's just in my head or if they sit in a general enough rock space that they're just reminiscent of other things, but I feel like there are touches of other popular bands in the songwriting here.
Hmm. Well, I feel like the only up-tempo tracks are Day I Die, System Only Dreams, and Turtleneck.
What about Guilty Party?
We'll see if we play a little bit. Here's Guilty Party. Ring a bell?
I'd call that borderline.
What do you mean borderline?
In terms of high energy versus low energy tracks.
Yeah, but I feel like the vocal performance there is really bringing the energy down.
Well, yeah, that's his whole deal. That's pretty much all this guy does is bring the energy down. Anyway, I remember the band this all reminds me of.
Okay.
Interpol.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Glad I called that back.
Great lyric there. Another Summer of Love. I don't know why I care.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. And I like when songs are written to not have a point that they're getting to musically, when they just create a space that you can really sit in for a long time.
Yeah.
And I feel like Guilty Party does that really well.
And actually, I feel like a lot of these tracks at the back half of this record do that. I'll Still Destroy You, I feel like, does that quite a bit. Sleep Well Beast, the closer, definitely does that. Karen at the Liquor Store.
That's a mystery to me. I've been trying to parse out what exactly Karen at the Liquor Store is about.
Okay. You want to tackle some lyrics on this bad boy?
Go read a few. Give me a few lickety splits. Give me a few lines.
Some lickety splits from the liquor store. I was a worm. I was a creature. I get on the ground the second I'd see you. You cannot command your love. I wasn't a catch. I wasn't a keeper. I was walking around like I was the one who found dead John Cheever. Hand in the glove. So blame it on me. I don't really care. It's a foregone conclusion. I see you in stations and on invitations. You'd fall into rivers with friends on the weekends. Innocent skies above. Karen at the liquor store. I can't wait to see you. I'm the one walking around like I was the one who found dead John Cheever.
Yeah, cut back to what is he talking to Karen, or is he comparing someone to Karen? Also, who is Karen?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. Karen has been someone that has appeared on national songs before, but Karen has always been spelled K-A-R-E-N. I'm thinking of, I think it's the boxer. The record of the alligator one of those two.
Okay.
Karen has appeared on there, but I'm not sure who C-A-R-I-N is. I've never seen Karen spelled that way before, so I don't even know if it's Karen like a person or something else.
If he's like Karen, like he's like slang, like I'm Karen for you.
Yeah.
I'm Karen at the liquor store.
Is Karen a particular type of alcoholic beverage that they're picking up?
I wouldn't know. I've never drank anything. Even water.
He's really obsessed with dead John Cheever in this song.
Who's John Cheever?
John Cheever was an American novelist who was active in the 50s and 80s, who struggled with his own repressed homosexuality, which was not public until after his death.
Okay.
Thank you, rap genius.
Karen.
There is no annotation for Karen. No, they don't know either.
It's a mystery. That doesn't, like, that song starts out in a really, really blunt way.
Yeah.
Where he's just like, I'm a mongrel for you. And then there's just this throwaway line about this woman he sees at the liquor store. I've been puzzling over this and I can't figure it out.
Yeah. And I think that's maybe what's keeping me from wholeheartedly embracing this record. The back half of this thing maybe just gets a bit too abstract for me. It's too difficult to paste in my emotions there. It's very personal at first, and I enjoy that quite a bit, but it does become far more abstract in the close here. I appreciate it again, but it's not something that I'm going to maybe hold up to me dearly once the end of the year comes by. I think it's what's kept me from fully engaging with the National in the past.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know.
I would at least say, I think Dark Side of the Gym is a more personal track. I think Guilty Party is fairly intimate. Sleep Well Beast.
Yeah. Sleep Well Beast is fascinating, the way he just like barely gets above a grovel for those lyrics, man. He's really down here to sleep well, beast.
But never mind. It's Leonard Cohen.
Yeah, you're right.
I miss Leonard Cohen.
Yeah, R.I.P. man. He was supposed to be on this thing. Did you know that?
On the Nationals record?
Yeah. They wanted him as the spoken word outro.
Wow, that would be really cool.
Yeah, right? He fits that aesthetic pretty well.
Yeah, too bad he peaced out with a really amazing album that only he can make about his own death. That
good timing, Leonard Cohen.
And now he's just Karen at the liquor store, you know what I mean?
That's who it is. It was Leonard Cohen the whole time.
Yeah. What a fun time. What a fun guy to spend an hour with.
Do you mean Leonard Cohen or do you mean the National?
I mean the National.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what a great guy they are. Good time to spend time with that guy in his depressive episode here.
That guy are really great.
That guy are really great.
That guy are pretty great.
Yeah. I just don't have a whole lot of other thoughts on this thing, man. You know, it's fine. It's enjoyable. I like it front to back, but I don't know how well it's going to stay with me. I just cannot seem to find the switch in my brain that turns me into being a huge National fan like so many people out there are. I appreciate them. I recognize them as a force to be reckoned with for sure, and that they have a number of fantastically consistent albums to their name. But for my personal taste, I don't know. I just don't get that attached to it.
I'll maybe take a little bit of a different side. I feel like there's a lot of poetry.
That's true.
To an album like this. I feel like sometimes it's a little heady, a little too, like, I'm the smart, sad guy writing about how tragic love is because everything ends, you know? Is it a little bit of that sometimes?
A little too many turtlenecks appearing on this record.
No, I like when the turtlenecks show up. They're comfy and they keep me warm, and it's part of my body usually that's not kept warm. My neck. I don't know. I like it quite a bit. I was surprised that there were so many standout singles in it. So I'm going to say it was a pretty good album.
All right. Let's take some highlights. I'm going to take two. I'm going to take The System Only Dreams in Total Darkness and The Day I Die, which is a banger of a song, man. Turn that thing on when you're cruising down the highway late at night.
I'm going to die.
City lights up. The percussion kicks in, man. The day I die, where will we be? Crash my car in the side of a building, man. That's it.
Woo! It's all over, everybody.
Two stars.
It's not a star ranking system.
Well, no, I was giving life two stars. Two stars out of five for life.
Wow. What an apt rating.
Yeah.
You know why? Because we're the stars of this life, and there's two of us.
Aw, yeah.
Okay.
What's your highlights, Mark?
I'm going to take Guilty Party. I'm going to take the opener because...
That's a good one. It's a really good opener.
I like that it's a little more, I think it's got a little bit more personal stakes than most National songs. I really love the imagery of, you know, I want to go home, but no one will be there.
Yeah.
It's not going to be home anymore is what he's saying.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take Day I Die. I'm going to take three.
Oh, yeah. We got to talk about the album cover real quick before we move on. The National, the past two records, I think, have totally summed up their sound excellently with some great album covers. This one just being an empty house with one window on with some people in. It looks like a confrontation is taking place, and darkness surrounds this house. I think that's just perfect for the kind of aesthetic they're going for on this thing.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
The previous one on Trouble Will Find Me was that woman's face with a mirror. Over top of it, like that claustrophobia and total anxiety of her, like, looking down. You can see her reflection is sort of panicked and frightened. That's exactly the emotions they're hitting in that thing.
Yeah.
So they're getting it.
Their debut record, which is just a man standing in a pool.
Yeah.
Wonder who made that decision.
I don't know. I can't speak for the band. That is Sleep Well Beast. If you're into the National, my thoughts are that you will like it a whole lot. If you're not, it's probably not going to sway your mind, but nonetheless, a fairly solid album throughout. Let's take just a quick break, Mark. When we come back, we'll chat about Taylor Swift and what we made her do.
I think, you know what we should do? We should probably take a quick break.
All right, let's take a break.
All right, so we'll go ahead. We're going to take a quick break. And just stay tuned after this for the other part. And we're going to talk about the newest single from Mrs. Taylor. So keep it on.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, let's get into this review.
And we're back for this week's 30-second Billboard.
All right, we are back and ready to talk about Taylor Swift's latest track, Look What You Made Me Do. This thing has been long anticipated by her legions of fans. It was just a matter of time before T-Swizz was back on the scene. But we had no idea she would be back with such vitriol and bombast and questionable choices in song making.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, you've heard the song already, right? You know what you're into.
I know what I am into. And I really appreciate it. Yeah. That was a great suggestion for the intro. I'll give it like one more shot with for the real one. Hi, welcome back to the weekly beat. And today we're going to talk about Taylor Swift. She's been bad. She did a bad one, and now we're going to talk about the bad one.
Let's do it, man. Let's talk about the bad one. Have you seen the music video yet?
No, I haven't. Have you?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I had totally seen it.
No, you say it like you're lying. No, totally. I
totally seen it. Yeah, totally. yeah, uh-huh, sure. No, I have seen it, and I'm ready to talk with you about it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay, and say one thing that's in the video that I'll see to prove that once you watch it, they'll know you're not lying.
There's going to be a car crash.
Okay. I'll put you to the test.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. If you're following along at home, we're going to play the video in 30-second chunks, taking it piece by piece, and then we will dissect the lyrics, the visuals, and the general song making. Hope you have as good a time as we do. Let's get into Look What You Made Me Do by Taylor Swift. Okay, so we're opening things up inside of Bloodborne, it seems. T-Swizz is the new playable character in Bloodborne.
It almost reminded me of the new Blade Runner trailer.
Mm, why?
Like, because the shot of like the candles and the lights from above, that aerial shot, makes it look like it's like a cybernetic future entering into. Also, did you really put T.S. there in the graves? Is that really fun?
Of course. Of course. There are a bunch of little Easter eggs in this thing, Mark, so pay attention carefully.
Okay, I'll keep a close eye.
We get a nice zoom in on a gravestone that reads, "Here lies Taylor Swift's reputation." Reputation is the title of her upcoming album. She's been very vocal in her social media feeds about this being a new start for her, that she is the snake. She's back with a vengeance. She's going to bite back at all the people that have called her a snake and think she's no good.
She is part of the official Metal Gear Solid canon. Instead of Solid or Liquid Snake, she's one of the snakes.
She's Lady Snake.
Lady Snake, yeah. That's exactly right.
The vicious Lady Snake.
Mm-hmm.
Man, these lyrics to open things up here. You know, she is typically pretty petty when it comes to this kind of stuff, and all of her songs have been targeted to some person. She's made a career off of writing songs to people she doesn't like, usually ex-boyfriends or ex-lovers. But man, these opening lyrics are juvenile and uninteresting and particularly targeted to a certain person that is unsubtle in a way that's even bad for her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like your little games. Don't like your tilted stage. The role you made me play of the fool. No, I don't like you. Clearly focused on Kanye West, who had a tilted stage in his recent tour with Life of Pablo.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out and openly saying, I don't like you in the first four lines of your song is really immature and petty and uninteresting, even for someone that's made an entire career off of doing that kind of thing.
And, you know, and if you're not keeping up with the gossip train, I mean, not that it's that, you know, like hidden of a message. There's something about the verbiage here that's really kind of off-putting for me. There's the just the that little games, like that's that, like you said, that is very childish, but it's also kind of like, I don't know how else to put this, but do you ever know someone who's like a little, like they're kind of an older dude and they're like reading you lines from their favorite anime? Like a guy who's a little bit older, he's into anime.
Wait,
and he's quoting
what?
It?
What?
You've never, you know anyone who's into anime?
What are you talking about?
Anime.
No.
Do you know what anime is?
Yes.
I was so excited for you to
say that.
Have
I ever heard an old man saying what anime is? What are you talking about?
No.
Who are you hanging out with when you're not hanging out with me?
Franklin. I've been hanging out with this Bill Gates impersonator.
Wait, what is the point you're trying to make?
Well, okay. I didn't maybe make it so well, but I don't know if you've ever known anyone who likes anime. Let's start like one step at a time. We'll do a 30-second
have
breakdown.
Have I ever known anyone that likes anime?
Yes.
Yes, I have.
Okay. Have you ever talked to them about anime?
A little bit, but that's something I try not to do on a regular basis.
Okay. In talking to those people about anime, have they ever explained things that happened in an episode to you?
Yes.
Okay. So what I'm saying is, I feel like Taylor Swift at the beginning of this song, there's like a certain disconnect with the way anime is written, where it sounds just so childish and weird, you know, after being through the sort of Japanese to American culture translation versus the language translation. And then to have someone just sort of say it to you, it always sounds really like, I don't know, there's something kind of off-putting about hearing someone read things that are said in an anime. We used to work with a guy when we worked at the same job who loved the show One Piece. I know this is so specific, but this is exactly what it conjured for me. He would explain to me about One Piece and goes, oh, and then he had this great line where he said like, well, I'm going to take you down and knock you down a peg. And it just sounds like a small child in a grown man's body. And the way Taylor Swift performs, I don't like your little games, feels so overperformative and childish to me that it makes me feel like I'm in like a, I'm talking to someone I'm trying to get away from. I don't want to really be hanging out with this person, you know?
Right. That's a very specific analogy, but I think it makes a lot of sense.
I don't even know what I mean.
So we are getting this is all going back to that line in the Taylor Swift or the Kanye West track from Life of Pablo about having sex with Taylor Swift and how she didn't give consent to put that thing out there. But then Kim Kardashian came forward with the videotape of her giving consent over the phone. And Taylor Swift thinks that they had planned this thing all out from the beginning. This was all a staged attempt to bring her down. They conspired against her. And so now she's striking back at them, which I think is ridiculous. I think Kanye is an impulsive person, and he wouldn't have that much forethought to plan an attempt to bring someone down like that.
Mm-hmm. And there's also the Katy Perry thing, right?
Right. There's also the Katy Perry thing, which we got a little bit of on her single Blad Blood. Bad Blood.
Blad.
A couple years ago. Blab Blab. I still think she's going for that villainous role here and trying to be more dark and evil, but she's still coming across as the whiny baby that she's always been.
Yeah. Can I add maybe an extra layer of complication to this too?
Please.
There's also the controversy, and arguably unfair controversy, around her failing to take a clear stance against certain hate groups who have, white supremacist hate groups who have endorsed her as the perfect, like, Aryan woman.
Right.
And they, she's been sort of meme worthy in those circles, and they've been on, like, Twitter and social media sites, been kind of owning her and her image. And people were sort of waiting for her, you know, and there's a lot of racial tension in America, and people have been kind of waiting for her to take any sort of a stance whatsoever on current events. And she refuses to. Whether she has that responsibility or not is, like, a whole conversation, but
no, she does.
Okay. Well, I'm interested in having that.
No, we can be clear about that. She does have the right to say that kind of stuff. She's the biggest name in the pop music world. Mm-hmm. She has the right to say what she wants.
Sure. But there is I agree with you. I do also see the argument that as a private citizen, she doesn't owe people taking a stance on anything. But I will say there is, regardless of what you feel about it, there is an extra cloud sort of already over her head. In a lot of circles. So for her to come out with this track, which is just so nakedly sort of self-obsessed, it's just a weird, it's a weird thing. It's a weird stance for her to be taking right now musically on top of everything that's happening to her socially.
Like, we're still doing that thing, Taylor?
But, like, worse than
after
ever.
After all that's been said and done?
We're escalating the de-escalation game. Like, what's up? What are we doing?
Yeah. I look forward to her album and one of the track being On Many Sides. I think that would be really good because, you know, she wants to keep her fans. Doesn't want to alienate anybody.
Did you happen to read that article about how this song is the first Donald Trump pop song, the first pop song of the Donald Trump era?
You know what? I probably did, but it's been a while since I've read it. So
it's a pretty common hot take. It's probably more than one writer has said that. But
yeah,
the idea being that, like, this song is petty. It's irrationally
right.
Yeah.
So points the finger. Yeah.
And there's exactly zero self-reflection. So those are, I feel like, good outline of everything that's happening.
Right.
That this track is inside of.
And I think that correlation is there, and I agree with that. But I also think she's done that previously in her discography. It's not a new thing for her to do this.
I agree. I think that is a hot take that's fun, but maybe not exactly historically accurate.
Sure. All right. Well, let's press on with the video. Let's see what else she's got. We're in the graveyard still. We'll see where we progress after this.
You made me play the fool. No, I don't like you. I don't like your perfect crime. How you laugh when you lie. You said the gun was mine. It's cool. No, I don't like you.
Okay. Hanging out in the bathtub full of jewels.
Mm-hmm.
She got some snakies on a chair.
Yep. It's true. I have exactly one positive takeaway from this track because I've listened to it before a few times. And it is the bridge there. That's
pretty
gothic
good.
Sort of style bridge when it's kind of epic and dark, and her vocals are harmonized so perfectly. The production is really killing it right there. It will give way to something much worse, but this is the one bubble in the song that I kind of enjoy.
And I will stand by that as well. I think the pre-chorus, the little bridge section here is really strong. You can't deny, you know, T-Swizz is simplistic and her ubiquity is frustrating.
Yeah.
But she's got a good team of producers, and she knows how to craft a decent pop song. 1989 proved that for sure. And we're still seeing glimmers of that here. We'll have some issues, I think, in a little bit with where this goes.
Right.
But this is not a bad moment here. And I think visually, you know, there are some spectacles to be had in this music video thus far.
Yeah.
Like, things look pretty sharp.
Yeah, it's shot well. The reflecting, the mirror imagery is nice. I'm not 100% a fan of the snake thing, but I understand, you know, what the mythology it's pulling from. But it almost feels to me like a Baz Luhrmann, you know, adaptation or something, like The Great Gatsby or something. Like, it looks nice. Yeah. It looks good.
I don't understand the line about the gun, though. You said the gun was mine.
Mm-hmm. Like, she was the one to fire the shot.
Oh, okay.
Smoking gun.
Yeah.
That was actually terrible, though. The part where she points her finger and shoots out of her finger.
Yeah, there's a little like flash of like gunpowder you can see coming from her fingers. That I don't like that much either.
She could have just done the finger gun and it would have been fine, but this weird post-processed like bullet, like flash of a bullet coming out of her hand is kind of stupid.
Yeah. In the Genius annotation for that line, there's a little screenshot of a Kanye West tweet that reads, "Fifth thing, I'm not even going to take credit for the idea. It's actually something Taylor came up with." Which reminds me of that long, huge Twitter dump that he had that one time that made me laugh a whole lot,
yeah.
Where he was just going on and on about everything, and Wiz has cool pants,
mm-hmm.
and all the turmoil that surrounded the launch of Life of Pablo.
Right.
Man, I love those days. They were simpler times.
Oh, my God. That when that was the big controversy?
Yeah.
36, I hate Nutella, and everyone who likes it's stupid. 47, right. Vacuuming is my favorite thing to do as far as household chores go. 48, I was a rap musician, but now I'm a rap god. 49, have you seen my house? It's pretty big, but I owe a lot of money. I actually need help.
Man, Wiz, I know we have problems, but I actually think you have a great sense of fashion. Hashtag Wiz has cool pants.
That is a really good thing. That's a great tweet.
She brings up being resurrected here. I rise up from the dead. I do it all the time. The Genius annotation reads, "A phoenix rising from the ashes is the most common metaphor for reinvention, but Taylor rising from the dead coincides more closely with the Ouroboros, since it's featured in the lyric video for the song. The Ouroboros is an ancient Egyptian symbol of a snake eating its own tail. It represents eternity, cyclicality, and the infinite cycle of life and death." Fans once criticized Taylor on social media using the hashtag Taylor Swift is a snake. And leading up to the song's release, she posted video clips of a snake to social media. In the wake of Swift's phone call with Kanye and Kim, there was also a controversy where fans believed Kim called out Taylor using snake emojis. Taylor is reclaiming the negative symbol and flipping it as a means of self-empowerment. On her website, Swift now sells jeweled snake rings that she wore in the Reputation promo photos and in the song's music video. So on and so forth.
You know, I
gotta say, as far as Genius annotations go, this one is surprisingly well written, grammatically correct, and has a good amount of supporting details to back up its assertions, unlike the recent trend of Genius annotations.
Right. Vaginal discharge. If you want to learn about vaginal discharge, go to Cardi B's lyric page for Bodak Yellow.
Also, if you do have that problem, please do not do that. Please consult your doctor.
I don't understand. I hadn't considered the Ouroboros thing because I can't figure out a way to logically apply it to her message here.
Yeah.
You know, it's not inherently positive or negative symbol, but it's much easier to make a negative trait than a positive one. So I'm kind of curious, how do you think she's using that?
I don't think she is. I think it's coming through in the lyric video primarily.
Okay.
I don't think that idea is in the lyrics of the song.
Like, if there's one way to apply it, it would be essentially to say none of this matters. Which I yeah. don't think that's what she's trying to say, which she would be right to say.
No. Also, she says she does it all the time, meaning rising up from the dead. And I don't think that's true. I think this is maybe the second time she's risen up from the dead, if we want to call it that.
Maybe. Well, I guess in her mind, she's constantly she's like besieged. Like, she's always under attack.
Oh, your life is so hard, Taylor Swift.
Well, who knows? I mean, you have no idea. This is the problem with Taylor Swift, actually, that no one really knows what kind of a person Taylor Swift is.
Yeah,
she is famously inscrutable. So, like,
yeah,
maybe she's like really depressed all the time. She is. A lot of people hate Taylor Swift. Maybe that's really hard for her. I don't want to talk down about that struggle.
That's true. That's true.
But at the same time, I have always felt that no matter how I felt about Taylor Swift's music, that she is 100% in control of her brand and her aesthetic. Yeah. This is the first time she's released anything where it feels like she isn't the one who's deciding where things are headed. You know, she isn't the one deciding this is where music's about to go for the next year or two. This feels completely reactionary, not only lyrically and thematically, but musically. Like, this song, it sounds like that song where she did with Zayn. Like, this doesn't sound like an original Taylor mm-hmm. track. It sounds totally this Frankenstein's monster of a Taylor Swift track, like a Kesha track. It sounds just like kind of everything, and it doesn't really sound like anything as a result.
they're taking someone that started in the pop country zone and forcing them down like the modern pop R&B styled zone, which is a totally different endpoint for where she began.
And that honestly, that's like a really good segue to the next 30 seconds.
Let's hit it. Let's talk about that chorus, Mark.
What does that sound like to you?
It sounds like "I'm Too Sexy" by Right Said Fred. That's the correct answer.
It's, yeah.
Because they had to credit Right Said Fred on the writing for the song to avoid being sued by Right Said Fred for ripping his vocal melody that he wrote 20 years ago.
If your diss track, you're against your will forced to
is
credit.
"I'm Too Sexy" for my shirt?
That's not a great place to be for a diss track.
This is awful. This is atrocious.
It genuinely sounds to me like they didn't finish writing it.
I don't understand, as someone that puts out music that has reached critical success, certainly commercial success, mm-hmm. and you know what good music sounds like, think blank space, think style, think just about anything off 1989 or any of her previous huge hits that struck a chord with preteens everywhere. This is the absence of melody. This is the absence of catchy hooks. This is atrociously horrible.
Yeah.
It's annoying. I mean, not in a way that's like, you know, oh, if she's so annoying, it's Taylor Swift. This is awful. This is maybe the worst pop hook of the year.
It is on that level. I completely agree. I feel...
And she releases this thing, like, confident that this is how she's going to present herself?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is how I've changed? Because at least, like, okay, the lyrics here are vapid. They're self-obsessed. She's always been that way. Kanye West is self-obsessed. Some would criticize his lyrics for also being vapid, and certainly Life of Pablo made it very clear that he was having a hard time coming up with more creative lyrics.
I love Kanye,
but at least
example.
That... yeah, at least that record is sonically engaging and interesting and captivating, and the way he uses samples is super interesting. Like, they're saying that this is her Yeezus. Yeezus is a masterpiece, man. That thing is challenging and abrasive, yeah. And redefined what industrial rap music could sound like and changed the trajectory of popular rap music. Mm-hmm. This is not going to change anything. This is like a reactionary step backwards. That is her attempting to keep up with her contemporaries while having no confidence to set foot onto this new ground.
Yeah.
This is tepid and uninspired and unoriginal and annoying and complete garbage. This thing is horrific.
Wow.
Whew. Hot take, baby.
Praise Charlie.
I've been waiting weeks to say those words. Woo!
Yeah.
Woo!
Woo, woo, woo! I feel like tepid and reactionary, those are some really great descriptors, because I feel like what the intent was with this track and what the intent was with this chorus was to have your big, like, you know, pop sort of like you're building the tension, you know, that we discussed that pre-chorus is like super, super on par. And I think what it's meant to do is just level it out with some heavy bass into sort of a like rap pop style track. A bass-driven track, you know? And I just don't think she knows how to wield it correctly. You know, it just falls apart.
It doesn't deliver at all. There's no good bass riff to it. The bottom falls out completely. It's weightless. There's nothing there.
Yeah. And it's not heavy enough. It's, like, literally not loud, as loud as what she's emulating. So on top of that, we're focusing on what's over top of the bass, which is her vocals. And it's basically... I'm too sexy for my car, right? So,
yeah. I mean, you got to melt my face off. You got to go into that with so much confidence to pull this kind of thing off. You're ripping the rug out, right? It's the antithesis of the pop song, of like pulling it out and keeping it cavernous. And people have done that successfully in the past, but she has no confidence to do that here, or the producer or the writer. She has no sense of what's happening.
I think pulling it out and keeping it cavernous would be a really good abstinence tagline for two kids. Oh.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Well, okay.
Hi, I'm Johnny, and I'm here to take the pledge to pull it out and keep it cavernous.
You should be hearing echoes down these halls, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I think, you know, even on top of how badly of a track is written, how it makes her come across, it's got sort of a double, it's you know, instead of a double-edged sword, it's like a double dull sword, because her whole aesthetic before, no matter what you thought of how blame gamey she could be, ultimately all of her music, it's pretty easy to tie it to girl power. Most of her music is, I got over it and so can you, right? That she's the classic, I got broken up with, you know, and right. I want to listen to Taylor Swift. And it's like, it's gone from girl power to me power. Like this what's mm-hmm. in this track is not applicable to anyone but Taylor. It's so hyper specific. So yeah. Any other application that you could have for her music is sort of a moot point, you know?
Yeah. The central lyric, though, is an area where I still have some issues. Look what you made me do. What has she done? What did she do?
That's a really good point.
Did she kill someone? Are they buried somewhere that we don't realize? Is she referring to the song? Because she definitely did something with this song. Look what you made me do. I released this garbage track, and it's your fault.
I threw my career in the trash can. Look what you made me do.
And don't get me wrong. That's a compelling narrative here. But there's an annotation on Rap Genius that reads, after the single was released, Taylor liked a fan's post on Tumblr that explained what it is that she was forced to do. Quote, she was always a very open person and always showed her true self, but it always got twisted around on her. So now she's playing, look what you made me do. I have to play into your character of me now so no one can turn anything against me again.
But look what you made me do and implies that it's a thing that has already happened, not what is happening. So it's almost as if she is issuing a follow-up statement for an event that is yet to occur.
Is it the album?
But album hasn't, has the album come out? Or did it just reset?
No.
The album didn't come out before this track, at least, so.
Right. I don't get it.
So what do you think about this sort of gilded birdcage she's in?
I think it's simple.
Simple or symbol?
Simple. Do you think it's symbol? Welcome to our new segment, Simple or Symbol. I think it's simple.
I think it's symbol.
All right, we agree on it.
It's coming this fall at Fox.
New podcast. Let's take a look at those lyrics. I don't like your kingdom keys. They once belonged to me. I mean, that's pretty self-centered, right?
That's a power play. What exactly does that mean? In what way was she in control of this person's fate?
When I think kingdom keys, I'm thinking like, you've got the rights to the party. You're in control. I used to be the one in control and you are now and I hate it. It's very Mean Girls.
Yeah. But isn't that kind of her whole aesthetic now? Like, isn't that...
I mean, I guess so now, right?
Like embracing that she's the mean girl. Is that kind of the whole thing?
But I still feel like it's she's not capitalizing on the mean aspect there. Like nothing she's doing here is that particularly violent. You know, like I want her to like go out there and like ruin somebody.
Yeah. She crashed a car holding a Grammy. That sucks.
Yeah. It's too bad about that car.
It's too bad about that Grammy.
I'm going to use a South Park analogy, and I know you're not a South Park fan, but there's an episode early on, season 5, called Scott Tenorman Must Die. Are you familiar with this episode, Mark?
Of course not.
Okay. So the central conceit is you know Eric Cartman, right? most people would consider him to be one of the main characters of the South Park series. Oh, would you agree with that?
He's like the sociopathic murder child, right?
Right. And so for the first five seasons, he's mostly like a whiny, foul-mouthed little kid, but kind of inoffensive. This episode involves him being wronged by an older kid named Scott Tenorman, and so the episode is about him planning his revenge. And he carries out his revenge by systematically murdering Scott Tenorman's parents, grinding them up into chili, and forcibly feeding the chili to Scott Tenorman in front of millions of other people, including his favorite band, Radiohead, who all have cameo appearances in the episode. Mm-hmm. It's frequently cited as one of the best episodes of the series because it demonstrated just how monstrous this small child was and how even though he was, said horrific things and professed to promote violence, he was never really truly a threat until he carried out one of his schemes. And so everything from then on in the series has that tinge of like, but he just might pull it off. You know, he might actually be that horrific of a person. And I feel like I want something similar from Taylor Swift, because if her posturing is just taunting through the song, saying, look what you made me do, I don't believe her. I don't see her as a villain or a snake. I just see her as more of the victim here, saying, like, I was so wronged by these people. They're so offensive and hurtful to me. Can you believe what they did? You know, it comes across as more just straight whining than anything else.
I love that you want Taylor Swift to become Eric Cartman.
Yeah. If you're going to commit to the villainous role, feed somebody's parents to them, you know? Like, notch it up a little bit.
You
commit.
Literally, first of all, you're bringing up eating family members a lot this episode. Secondly, I can't think of a worse combination of things than this era Taylor Swift and Eric Cartman. That sounds ear-flayingly terrible.
Look what you made me do.
You know, Eric Cartman did cover Lady Gaga. So
he did.
God, I hate South Park. Can we keep doing? Can we move on?
Yes. Okay. 30 more seconds.
No place to sleep. Locked me out and threw a feast.
What?
The world moves on another day, another drama. But not for me. All I think about is karma. And then the world moves on, but one thing's for sure. Maybe I got mine, but you'll all.
Okay, lots happening.
Holy
in that segment.
Crap.
A lot is happening.
Okay, first thing that happened was Taylor Swift watched Spring Breakers.
Yeah. Got a lot of neon going on here. A lot of spandex.
Wearing the masks.
Yeah.
I feel like she just watched Spring Breakers. And then she watched that one ad, that Apple ad where they threw the thing at the screen. It was like 1984.
Yeah. Yeah. Hot take, the second part of the second verse, the world moves on, another day, another drama, that might be worse than the chorus. That is offensively awful to my ears.
Why is that?
Because she can't even sing it. The world moves on, another day, another drama. And it's awful lyrics. Yeah. It's awful production. And she says, but not for me. All I think about is karma.
Actually, I think and that's what she says. All I think about is Cartman.
Yeah. I don't think that's true. I don't think all she thinks about is karma.
Yeah.
Also, if all you think about is karma, what kind of sociopath are you?
Well, think about it. Karma as a concept is usually used by people who feel that they've been wronged and people deserve punishment for wronging them. It's pretty easy to attach to sociopathy.
And we've got an open thread here. Maybe I got mine, but you'll all get yours.
Hmm.
So maybe something is coming.
Oh, Jesus.
This is an open threat to anyone that's ever wronged her.
She's like the new Secretary of State.
And potentially an admission of fault here by saying, maybe I got mine.
Mm-hmm.
Realizing that she's been played a fool and that things have not gone the way she would prefer them to go.
I don't know. I honestly, just to be frank with you, I can't stop thinking about this like leather auditorium setting that we're caught in the middle of currently.
Right. So this also kind of flies in the face of that. She's bringing the sex appeal here. She's going for the dominatrix kind of look with the leather outfit, the strong bustier happening there, the leather whip in her hands, the choke collar. This is a different perspective for Miss Swift here.
Yeah, I will at least give her credit that this is definitely a, like, image adjustment.
Yeah. I think some folks have directed some critiques at this as being too derivative of Beyoncé's work with Lemonade last year, with focusing on the visual album. I tend to disagree with that. I think just because Beyoncé did a really cool thing visually, it doesn't mean that everyone that follows in her shoes is just copying her. I think she's maybe opened up the medium for some folks that wouldn't use it otherwise. Mm-hmm. We saw Frank Ocean do some pretty cool stuff with video last year. You know, I think she's got some money, and she's got some knowledge that was a huge success and is trying to do something similar, but I don't think she's just copying Beyoncé.
Yeah, I don't know if I would give her fault for that either. I mean, even if that is the idea or the inspiration, I don't think that deserves criticism.
Right. Pop music is derivative in its nature. You know, they're going to copy from other people. So,
and you know, why not? Lemonade was a huge success, and I wonder what other pop star Lemonades would look like. This just feels like an extremely expensive music video. I mean, there's really, the imagery happening here is not particularly dense or unusual, or you know what I mean. This is a lot of it's simple.
Not simple.
Yeah, it's simple, not simple.
Okay, agreed.
Except for this. What is she doing? What is it? I don't understand. She's directing women. She's directing lesser dominatrixes.
There are robots standing before her.
Those are robots?
And I think that those are robots that are before her, made to look kind of like her. And I think from what I've read, this is directed at her criticizing the way that she has an army of fans that are robotic and only do things like she does, that she says what she wants them to do, and then they all follow. I think she's gotten some criticism for not having fans that are as mentally with it as other pop stars.
That's what she's going to do. Look what she made me do. She's activating her army, her thought army.
Yeah. It's like the plot of a Kingsman movie.
I actually just watched Kingsman for the first time last night.
We should talk about that.
Right now?
Not right now, but later.
Okay.
This episode's going long as it is.
Fair enough.
Speaking of which, we should keep it going.
I agree.
So here's the next 30 seconds.
I feel like there's so much about marketing and branding that is ingrained deeply into her music.
Yeah.
Like this.
It's about to get worse.
Oh, is it really?
Yep.
Because I feel like the use of TS as like a symbol for her brand is, I don't know. Like when I think about other comparable pop stars, there's just something that just feels so direct in its nature as marketing. You know what I mean? Like when I think about Kanye West,
it is my name.
He had the bear for a while, but then it was like also part of his sort of creative message, and he moved on and it changed. And I don't know.
Her creative message is her initials because it's herself.
Exactly. It's not like a weirdo dead smiley face like Nirvana or something that's supposed to mean something that the band represents. It's just kind of her.
Yeah.
It's just kind of her.
Yeah. It's the cult of personality, man.
Look in my eyes. What do you see? The cult of personality.
All right, I really want to talk to you about the next 30 seconds. Can we just do those real quick?
You don't want to finish out the Living Color song?
No.
Okay.
I'll be the actress starring in your bad dreams. I don't trust nobody in your bad dreams. I don't trust nobody in your bad dreams. I don't trust nobody in your bad dreams.
God, we're getting to the best part.
Okay, well, I want to talk about the phone thing in a little bit, but before we do, this video is very stylish, you know, very image-driven. I think that this image is amazing. I think this is exactly what she needs to capitalize on. Herself as the new rebranded Taylor Swift, standing on top of a mountain of her previous selves as they're all clawing over each other, trying to get to the top to throw her from the castle. And then she just launches her hands out and they all go flying from her. That's the villainous kind of thing I want to see from this stuff. All of her previous selves, rended from her person, cast on the winds, and she's just standing there behind the big glowing tea, saying, "Here I am, I'm a new person." And as ridiculous as that phone voicemail thing is, I think paired up with this visual, it makes it a little bit better, and I more likely believe that she is actually transfigured and become a new person than who she was before.
You really think
this visual is awesome?
You think this visual actually makes that line better?
I think it makes it a little bit better. I think it's still awful, but I think it makes it a little bit better.
I mean, I was kind of following you up to a point, but I will not follow you up to that point. That's some craziness.
Okay. Well, we can deal with that later. What do you think of this visual? Do you like it?
I don't know. Not really. There's something that's kind of... I understand it's like self-obsessed, yay, cool, whatever. But there's something that's just so... I don't know. There is just nothing else to latch on to other than this is just about Taylor Swift. This is entirely about Taylor Swift. It's about nothing else. She's changing her brand. She used to be this brand. She's a new brand. She's mad now. That's her brand. Screw all the other brands. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to get out of that. How am I supposed to feel? What does that reveal about the world around me to me? What does that reveal about, you know, something I can learn from? There's nothing.
Right. But I think as far as the narrative of the individual here, there's something compelling about her recognizing her previous selves and just that grotesque pile of humanity as they're just clawing over each other to trying to get to the top and dethrone the main one.
Well, no, that would be more interesting if it was her previous selves, as in, this is what I looked like before I was famous, or this is kind of what my vibe was as a human being. But I feel like what I'm looking at is, this is how I marketed this album to you before. Do you remember when I wore that dress? Well, now that person is murdered because I killed them.
Yeah. But there's something to be said about, like, where I'm paused there, her with her, like, silvery, sparkly dress and guitar when she was on the VMAs and Kanye West embarrassed her in front of everyone. Mm-hmm. There's something to be said about her naivete and innocence there that was, I think, more pure, and seeing her fall from grace. I always equated, going to Paradise Lost, right? We've got the devil and we've got Eve. And Kanye West is the devil, and Taylor Swift is Eve.
Oh,
and she's been tempted by the devil, and she was a pure, sweet thing. But then she took a bite from the fruit of knowledge, and now she's in the Illuminati.
Sound crazy.
Yeah, that's the analogy I like to use for her. She's fallen from grace.
See, but think about why you're saying this is good. It's good because it references a famous thing that happened to her in the media. I don't care about those things, so I don't care about this.
Well, you're not a real fan.
No, I'm not a real fan. You're exactly right,
so
Charlie.
That's that song. 5 stars out of 5 stars. New best pop song of the year. I hate it because I love it, and I love it because I hate it.
Wow.
No, I'm just kidding. I've learned a lot about you. I don't like the song at all. You're not really convinced by that image? You just feel it's kind of funny?
In fact, I'm really not convinced by the image.
Well, shoot. Let's get the last
was Iron Man, and he was like, I used to be these other Iron Men. I'm blowing up all the armor because I'm the new Iron Man. I would think, wow, that's really cool. He's a new Iron Man. But Taylor Swift's not Iron Man. Taylor Swift is just, she's something that has been forced upon me for years. I had to watch the VMA thing because it was a famous moment, even though I didn't care about it. It's just a bunch of eras of a person who made a ton of money being a person.
And now she's mad.
And now she's mad. Who cares? Who cares about that? You care about that, you monster.
I care a little bit about that.
You're a monster. You're a monster person.
I'm sorry.
A monster truck.
All right. Well, we still have 1:15 to go in this thing, so we should keep it going.
Okay.
Why? Oh. Because she's dead. Look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do.
She just lifted up two motorcycles. That's kind of ridiculous.
It was kind of ridiculous. What do you think the point she's making artistically there is?
I can lift two motorcycles with my bare hands, Kanye. What can you do?
Look what you made me do. I had to pick up vehicles.
With my bare hands. We got some choreography, some dance work happening here. I think it's pretty simple.
All men.
Yeah.
Is there a purpose for that?
Probably.
Great.
I don't know what the purpose is.
Well, we saw the army of robot women who are just like her. Is this her sort of male following? Is that the idea? They're her cheerleaders. She has imitators and she has cheerleaders.
Yeah. And it's interesting that a lot of them are people of color. I don't know. That phone exchange is off. I'm just going to reiterate that.
Yeah, I guess it's probably important. I feel like I've said this a lot too when we're hanging out, but not on the internet. That's the worst. That's the worst thing. Like, as a statement, it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh, you're looking for Taylor? Oh, sorry. You were calling because you were looking for Taylor. When you called Taylor's number, you were looking for Taylor? Oh, you're looking for... I'm so sorry.
She can't come to the phone right now.
I'm so sorry. Yeah,
why? She's dead. Oh, because she's dead.
Also, anime. Do you see what I mean by anime? She's like overperforming. Yeah. It's weird. It's childish. It's uncomfortable to hear an adult talk that way.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh. Because she's dead. Lots of spreading of the legs in the dance choreography as well. Did you notice that? Lots of things where she's kind of like popping her legs out and squatting down. That seems to be like 3/4 of her dance moves in that sequence.
Look what you made me do. I took a shit on the floor.
A metaphorical one on this record, which you all can now listen to constantly.
Oh. So
I'm so popular, I'm going to use my fame to plant the worst song you've ever heard in brains of millions of people around the globe.
Around the globe.
Oh, look what you made me do.
Is that the purpose? Is that she's like, I made a bad song? Like, look, I made a crappy song.
Deal with it, America.
I guess we already said that, but it was a fun realization to come to a second time, as well as the first.
Just about out of thoughts on this thing. We got to keep going, though.
Do look what you just made me do. You guys!
Stop making that surprise face. It's so annoying.
Yeah, you can't possibly be that surprised all the time.
What's with that, bitch?
Don't call me that.
Y'all!
Oh, stop acting like you're all nice. You are so fake.
Oh, there she goes, playing the victim again.
Holy crap!
You get a full-on skits here at the very end.
Throwing out the snake?
Oh, yeah, man. So maybe some more meta humor here. There she goes playing the victim again. She's not wrong.
Yeah.
But again, I say acknowledging that you're doing that thing, even though you still continue to do it, does not make you doing that thing okay.
I agree with that. I'm also...
We've talked about that previously.
I'm sending you a screen cap. Of where okay. I paused the video.
Okay.
Let me know when you get it.
Got it.
Okay. A lot going on in this image. So, I kind of like...
She's making a face like she's listening to the song.
For just a second, look at how they have her hand holding the snake.
Okay.
Because it, I don't, is it, she's like, her fingers are kind of in it. Like, I can't really tell.
Yeah.
The snake is part of her being. And if you look on the right, you can see some really crap post-processing on the CGI effects on that Taylor on the right.
Yeah. Yeah. She's not all the way present. She's kind of in between worlds.
She came from another dimension to try to stop this from happening.
I'm the Taylor that's here to stop all this from happening.
I'm Wise Taylor.
Season 5 of Heroes. Save Taylor Swift. Save the world.
I don't know. I think this song is pretty bad. I think it's a real slog to get through. I think it's atonal in a lot of ways. I think that chorus is one of the worst choruses I've heard this year.
Yeah, it's real bad.
And I personally feel that she is attacked at such a great level for taking the stance, like, that is completely unfair considering how many other popular artists are entirely this selfish and ridiculous and refusing to point the finger at themselves. Like, that is so overwhelmingly the perspective. So for her to be attacked at the mere notion that she would do it too is, you know, kind of crappy. Doesn't really make any sense. It's kind of singling her out for no reason. But at the same time, that is what the song is. And I hate that other stuff too. I have a whole podcast to prove that's how I feel all the time. So I hate this as well.
Yeah. Thanks, Billboard.
You got it, fellas.
15 seconds to go.
What are you doing?
Getting receipts. You're going to edit this later.
I would very much like to be excluded from this narrative.
Can we talk about the plane that says reputation on it?
Okay.
Hey, that sucks.
Yeah. It's like Suicide Squad sucks.
Yeah, it looks like garbage, and it's a stupid idea.
Exactly my thoughts after that movie finished.
I gotta see that.
It's awful. I hope she flies around in a plane that looks just like that, and people are like, man, that plane looks ugly as garbage.
I hope she flies around in a plane like that, but she's flying the plane, and she's drunk.
Just crashing it, tearing up the fields.
Look at me, America. Look what I've become.
Look what you made me do.
I'm only a little worse at this than Harrison Ford.
Oh, no. Too soon.
Well, I'm, you know what? Is there an argument to taking this because it is such a huge part of the music discussion?
Of course not.
No,
of course
not.
No. No, there's no reason to have this thing anywhere near you. I feel like it had its big moment a couple of weeks ago, and that moment has already passed in culture. Like, we've already forgotten that this song exists.
Yeah, probably by the time this episode comes out, too, it'll be, like, history.
Yeah. Of course, then we're getting close to the album release, and then it might come back again. I'll say that I'm intrigued to listen to the album. You know, I want to know the source of this nightmare, find the beast it comes from, the sort of foreboding warning it has sent out. Is the rest of the album as horrific as this thing is? We'll see. It's going to be a freaking interesting thing to talk about, though, man.
Yeah, for sure. I'm open up to the idea that it might be beautiful the entire way through. Like, every track is this gorgeous exploration of self and is incredible. There's just this one turn right at the very end. That would be a fascinating listen.
Yeah. There could be a sequence of songs that just totally changes the way we see this thing and we're praising it from the mountaintops, although I think that's highly unlikely.
Well, you know what? Hold out hope, Charlie. You never know.
All right. I will not be taking it. That's a thumbs down for me.
I'm also not going to take it.
All right. Great. Let's move on. Let's talk about some happier stuff. What else have you been listening to this week, Mark?
I have a few things here that I think are kind of interesting, but you probably won't feel that way because you're rude.
You're right.
Speaking of female pop stars that have an unusual amount of sway in the pop world, I listened to Blondie's new record, Pollinator.
Ooh, I didn't even realize they put one out.
I feel like nobody does. I feel like it's almost obscure that they've released music.
That's weird.
It is kind of weird. But you know what? I feel like I admire Debbie Harris a lot. Like, I feel like she did a lot of really cool things for pop music. I feel like she had a little bit more of an edge to her pop music. Rip Her to Shreds was amazing. Atomic is amazing. The reggae stuff maybe doesn't hold up so well, but there's a ton of great Blondie tracks out there. And I was surprised to hear that there's some really great hooks on this album. It's maybe not 100% an amazing album start to finish. It doesn't really do a lot of crazy stuff, but the hooks on it are actually like kind of interesting, like worth listening to, in my opinion.
Huh.
I'm going to play
I gotta give it a shot.
A clip from Long Time.
Does it take you a long time?
It's like a pretty good hook, right?
Yeah, man, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I think the best track on the album is this track, Already Naked.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's like super hot. Like, I'm crazy hot for it. Is that what you wanted to hear?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Here's a track of the chorus. A clip of the chorus. What do you think?
I think it sounds like I gotta listen to it, man. It sounds cool.
Yeah, it's you know, it. I think Blondie's really good, and it was really fun to hear that they're still doing good stuff.
Yeah, man. I can't believe they snuck that one out. I didn't even see it release.
Yeah, it exists. It exists. It's interesting. It's worth listening to. It's good. It's interesting. It exists.
It's worth listening to.
I only have two other things here. Excuse me. I have two other things.
Okay.
I have the new album by Neck Deep, The Peace and the Panic.
Ooh, yeah. I wanted to listen to this, but I never get around to it. You hated those guys a couple years ago.
I honestly kind of still do.
Yeah.
It's like so in my wheelhouse. Neck Deep being this kind of like alternative sort of emo leaning group that sounds like they're from the early 2000s.
Yeah, pulling on a lot of like the Blink-182 soundscapes. Yeah. You know, if you were into that kind of space, you'd probably jive with the sound they're trying to put out.
If you've listened to Yellow Card and had a good time, maybe Neck Deep is for you. But there's something to the fact that if you listen to Neck Deep, and they've done very well. I mean, like, I was reading a kind of smaller music journal that actually a mutual friend of ours from back in college wrote an article for. They awarded that album, that Neck Deep album, like album of the year for their like pop punk journal. It gets
back in 2015.
Yeah. And it gets respect in those spaces. Actually, it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
I was actually, maybe I'll tell you this off air later, but I kind of hate it because it just sounds to me like the genre hasn't progressed at all. In fact, if you listen to Blink-182 in the year 2000, like towards the end of their career versus the beginning, you can hear a ton of progress. You can hear that the band has ended somewhere that they didn't begin. But if you listen to Neck Deep, it's as if it was just the same the whole time. And there's these sort of tepid political statements, which is just don't trust the White House is their entire message, which is like fair enough, but it's not really a constructive or meaningful thing to say. It's sort of just this protest that you could really apply to any era of politics and it would fit, you know, it's kind of meaningless.
Yeah.
Here's a clip of the track Heavy Lies. That could practically be from like 2002. Like it.
Yeah.
No progress made whatsoever. It just sounds like that stuff. The vocals are an imitation, as far as I'm concerned, of other vocalists.
Yeah. I want to give it a shot because I did not hate that first album they put out. In fact, there were a couple tracks on there that I liked quite a bit. I don't have the same stake in the genre that you do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I didn't totally hate it. I was curious to see how their follow-up landed. So you just think it's more of the same?
I think it's more of the same. I think they try to be a little more prescient. I don't know if you heard that vague lyric that was some CEO, some people in power. It's just totally generic protest stuff that doesn't really mean anything.
Right.
And I think the riffs, it just sounds pulled from other stuff to me. I just can't hear anything new in it, and as a result, I just don't like it.
I think that's fair.
Okay.
Cool.
Last thing here for me. I listened to Blue Chips 7000.
Ooh. By Action Bronson.
Yes. The new Action Bronson album.
The man.
It's a good album. It's more Action Bronson. Nothing crazy different in his style here. There's some pretty good singles. I enjoyed my time with it, and I want to make it clear that it's good. It's worth listening to. If you like that guy, there's a lot of good tracks on here. Visit it. However, there is one track in this album that is maybe one of my least favorite tracks of the year so far.
Ooh, I got to hear some of that.
Oh, you're about to, my friend. It's the track Chop, 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 and I hate it because I think the vocal performance on Action Bronson's part is almost objectively out of tune with the song. And it's hinged on this bad repetition of the word chop, the phrase chop, chop, chop. And it's just kind of, it just gets really irritating.
Perfect.
Only one listen in.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Wheels on the range go chop, chop, chop. Chop, chop, chop. Chop, chop, chop. Wheels on the range go chop, chop, chop. All up and down the block, Kelly Slater.
Holy cow.
Right? I'm not crazy.
That's been... No, that's real bad. That's kind of my thing with Action Bronson is, like, I like his personality so much. I think he's just enthusiastic and exuberant and hilarious, and I like him a whole lot. But a lot of the stuff I listen to him, there's been stuff like that where he tries to sing his own hook and it sounds awful.
Yeah.
Or he doesn't quite know where the beat is on something. Like, there are just like little minor shortcomings like that when, you know, he can put out good stuff, but he can also put out some stuff that just lands real flat, and something I've got to try to come to terms with.
Yeah, it's, and you know, maybe you don't actually have to, because like I said, as an album, I didn't have that problem overall. I had a good time. There's some, like I said, some great tracks, but I feel like he's got to be really careful with that stuff. I feel like he's got to be really careful with his vocals. I can't believe that was released that way. That, like, that sounds like it's out of tune.
Yeah. Do another take, man. Keep working that.
Chop, he's chop, a better producer. Chop.
Chop, chop, chop. Yeah, it's way out of beat, way out of rhythm. Not great.
Okay. That's up for me, though. I'm curious to hear what
good
you,
stuff, Mark.
What you got.
Did you listen to Antisocialites by Always?
I listened to the first four tracks, but I have yet to do a full listen.
Oh, my God, man. All right, I'm going to talk about it a little bit, okay? You tell me what you think later.
Okay.
I think this album's really good. I think this album is really good, really good. Always is a tight little Toronto indie group. We had the privilege of seeing them in concert a couple years back when they were touring off their first album. And I think that first album is really solid, but I also think it maybe suffers from kind of existing in the same space too much, that they were kind of doing variations on the same sound. I don't, off the top of my head, know the difference between tracks like, say, Next of Kin and Atop a Cake and The Agency Group. You know, there's a couple tracks in there that kind of sound very similar, derivative. What's great about Antisocialites is that there is a wonderful variety to these songs, that even though they are existing in a similar light dream pop space, they are very quick to change up the style. Every song sounds unique and individual here. I don't know that the quality of the songwriting or the musicianship is any better or worse than their previous album. I think it's about the same, but I do think I might like this album just a tad more because of the increased variety in the sound. It's also like half an hour, man. It's done in the blink of an eye. So succinct. There's one track on here that's just a little bit over 2 minutes, and I was so upset because it was going to be my candidate for best 2 minute song of the year. It's called Your Type. It's really great. Did you have any thoughts on the first four tracks?
Not particularly, no. I would like to dig in a little bit more before I...
Let me just pick and choose a couple things here. The track Plimsoll Punks is number three on here. I think it's really great.
I can barely breathe.
Really good stuff on that one. Quick excerpt from Your Type. Doesn't that just get you going, man?
Yeah, that sounds real good.
It's really good. And it's 4 seconds over 2 minutes. I want it to be a 2 minute and under song, but it's not quite there. And I think production wise, they have never sounded better than the track Hey on this thing. I'll play a little bit from that one here too. I mean, they've got layering going on here now. They've got like different sound effects through the synths coming through with the guitar still strong.
Yeah.
It feels more like a fully fleshed out band. Feels like they're looser. They're having a lot more fun. I don't know, like going back and listening to their self-titled some more, I feel like that album is still really great too. And I don't know if this is quality-wise better or worse, but the variety and the diversity of sounds on this thing makes me like it just a bit more.
Nice. That's exciting.
It's really good, man. I like it a whole lot. I listened to another album here. Let me see. Oh yeah, Outrage Is Now by Death From Above, 1979. A pretty big fan of the group. Enjoyed the Physical World quite a bit from 3 years ago and was excited to see them coming back. But the singles from this thing weren't really doing it for me, and I'm sad to report that the rest of the album isn't really doing it for me either. They have totally musified themselves, which is a term that I am proposing to Webster's Dictionary, the process by which a band that was famous for big riffing, another term that I am proposing to Webster's Dictionary, become absolutely sapped of their power and energy in favor of putting more emphasis on vocal performances and creating more accessible pop tunes, sacrificing what made them unique in the first place. This thing is really empty of outrage, of viciousness, of ferocity. I love these guys for bass riffs that'll blast your head in, and there's not a single good one on this entire record, and it makes me really sad.
Holy moly.
Let's play a little bit from the lead track, Freeze Me. That's a Linkin Park song.
Really?
That's really uninteresting, man.
I mean, I didn't like that last album as much as you did.
Yeah.
And I was kind of wondering where these guys were headed. I was encouraged that it was called Outrage Is Now. It seemed like it was trying to maybe tackle some bigger things.
No. Here's a little bit later on in that same song. They made the vocal performances the centerpiece of this band, and that should never have been the case. That's not what this group is about. It's all about those bass riffs, man. Big riffing. And we're not big riffing on this thing. We're just getting some cheap off pop songs that sound like Muse or Linkin Park, man. Mm-hmm. Okay, I did lie. There is a little bit of a good riff on here. It comes in the final track, Holy Books. I actually do like some parts of the song, not the whole thing, but there's some good riff in here. I'll play a little bit of that. That's more in my wheelhouse for the group, but unfortunately it's the last song in the album, and everything before that is pretty standard. Mm-hmm. Disappointment of a record for me here. Not great.
I still think I'm going to check it out, but that doesn't sound encouraging. That sounds like pretty run-of-the-mill right. rock music there.
They landed a huge hit with Trainwreck 1979 on their previous record, which was very much in this kind of style. Accessible pop ballad with a hook that everyone loved, and they just chased that feeling onto this record. I don't blame them for doing that. It was their biggest hit to date and got a lot of airplay on various movie trailers and commercials. Mm-hmm. But that's not what I go to that band for, and I think they sacrificed a lot of that stuff in favor of more accessibility.
That's rough, especially if the album is called Outrages Now! Exclamation mark.
Yeah, it's Outrage is Now. They musified themselves, Mark.
I love that term. I love that you've coined it.
Thank you. I hope Webster's appreciates it too. One more for me. Just a couple listens in, but I think I'm firm enough to give my thoughts on The Killers, the Wonderful, Wonderful album. It's actually not the name. The album is called Wonderful, Wonderful. It's not called The Wonderful, Wonderful album. Although I think I like that title more. So The Killers have been quiet for some time. They haven't put an album out since 2012's Battle Born. And even before then, Day and Age, their previous record came out in 2008. So it's been almost a decade with just three records. You know, they've been pretty quiet for a group that really defined a lot of mid-2000s pop rock music, that crossover kind of stuff. You know, certainly had a huge hit over in England with Mr. Brightside.
Sure.
I think they're one of those bands that you and I mentioned as having like one good song to their name.
Oh,
being
what?
When You Were Young. And that's about
no,
it.
No, totally.
Right?
No, I love Mr. Brightside. Don't.
Okay. Because I was going to say, if we did say that earlier, I do want to maybe rectify that and say that Mr. Brightside is a killer song. And even some other tracks, like Somebody Told Me, I have some good times with.
Yes, I agree.
Sam's Town, I think, is inconsistent, but there are some good tracks on that record as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I have not really kept up with the Killers since then. The album here, Wonderful, Wonderful, is fine. It's pretty consistent, I think. It's not surprising or challenging. I think it updates the production to be more in line with what's popular these days. Obviously, a lot of electronic stuff going on here, some synth work. Brandon Flowers' vocals sound as solid as they've ever have.
Mm-hmm.
The lead single they've come out with is called The Man, which has got a nice swagger in production to it, but lyrically I think it's pretty simple. And that tends to be my complaint for a lot of these tracks, is that they're just too focused on the pop side of things, a little too simplistic lyrically to be really interesting. But there are some cool subversions of masculinity on this record I like a lot. A song called Tyson versus Douglas that wrestles with the speakers' problems, their own personal conflict when they realize that Mike Tyson was fallible, that he lost a fight and was not the great man that he thought he was, and trying to understand his own view of that. There's some cool things in here. There's one track that is, I think, just great, very Killers. I think it can stand with the best of their stuff from the mid-2000s. It's called Run for Cover. I want to play a little bit of that one here. A pretty standard pastiche of 80s sounds, but I think it's really effective there, man. I think his vocal performance is solid and the production is real tight.
Yeah, that sounds ready for radio in a way that I don't feel like they've been since their first album.
Yeah, totally, man. I think they really flubbed the ball with Are We Human or Are We Dancer on Day and Age, and everything was kind of a joke since then.
Yeah.
But they've got certainly a renewed sense of purpose and energy that you can feel. I don't think this album is quite where it needs to be, but certainly there are spikes of really great energy that some would say stands along with some of their best stuff they've ever done.
Wow. Okay, I'll definitely check it out then.
Yeah, I think it's all right. One last thing for you to keep on your radar. Did you see Bass is dropping a new album this November?
Who? Bass? Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
Oh my god. That taste? Last Baths album really put me in a mood. I would love to hear it.
It's called Yo Man. That's Baths.
Nuts. I got to tell you, at least three of that guy's albums have defined different points in my life. I mean, once that thing comes out, you're gonna be having to listen to it.
It's gonna be a doozy of a conversation, man.
Oh man.
So we got some more stuff coming in down the pipe. This year's not over yet.
That's exciting. I'm excited.
All right, man.
I'm invigorated.
Speaking of being excited and invigorated, what's your choice for next week, man? What are you feeling?
All right. It turns out I'm calling an Audible, and we're going to review an audiobook.
All right. I love Audible. This week's podcast has not been brought to you by Audible. We have no contract with them whatsoever.
We can't be bought.
Of course not. We're the people's podcast.
Yeah. No one will ever buy us. No one will give us ad money. And that's because we chose to, not because no one wants to.
Solidarity.
Okay. I'm thinking it's time. We haven't done that. We haven't done this yet this year. We did it once last year, and I think it was interesting.
Oh, no.
We're going to listen to the first Jesse Sun Kill Moon album from 2015. No, I'm just kidding. Let's do an EP roundup.
All right. Good call.
I got three EPs here that I've been meaning to check out, and I only had two up until I just happened to be looking on the internets and noticed that Young Thug just put out an EP called Young Martha. That'll be one.
Oh, with that other guy.
Yes. The other guy.
Yeah.
I'm also going to put Anoni on here. We haven't gotten any Anoni talk in.
Ooh, good call. Our old friend. Maybe she'll come back and visit. We haven't seen her in a while.
I've listened to the EP once through and I enjoyed it. I'm curious to see what you think about it. And
I definitely want to listen to it.
Okay, great. And lastly, is the self-titled Alice Glass EP, which is the one I am most hyped about. Alice Glass being the lead singer from Crystal Castles, who is now a solo artist, who's leaning more into pop than experimental pop as she was before. I've heard good things, and I can't wait to check it out.
Just called Alice Glass?
That's right.
All right. Well, there we go. It's an EP roundup for the ages. It's getting to that time of year, isn't it?
Oh,
about time
boy.
For an EP roundup.
That's exactly right.
Oh, boy. A couple other albums out throughout the week as well. I think you mentioned Prophets of Rage. Maybe is worth taking a look at some point here. Maybe we'll throw that in there.
If you want to get around to doing a review of Prophets of Rage, if you want to get like a casual download, down-home review of Prophets of Rage, I will also listen to it.
I mean, want is such a strong word. You know,
I want to listen to it.
I'd like to live in a time period where I have listened to it and can talk about it, but the thought of actively listening to it is a little off-putting.
Okay, that's a fair point.
We got a couple other albums coming out in September here, including Miley Cyrus's return, Shania Twain's long-awaited return, which I am certainly interested to hear. Macklemore's been at it again. Godspeed You Black Emperor, Chelsea Wolfe, which I'd like to hear a bit. Certainly lots of stuff to get into here. It's been a busy month, and there's still a lot to talk about. The year is not over yet, like I said. So let's flash over to the Billboard Hot 100 to find out what our next topic of conversation is going to be. Mark, we got a new number one.
Okay.
I thought it was going to be the other Taylor Swift song that was out there. She put out another single. It's called, what is it called?
Look what I did because of you.
No, it's called Ready For It. But that thing has plummeted off the Billboard charts. It has not made a splash, which is kind of a shame. But you remember Cardi B? We talked about Bodak Yellow.
Yep.
Yeah, that's number one.
Ooh, she's blowing up, I'll tell you what.
That's the first number one hit for a female rapper in something like 15 years.
Wow.
I want to say like Missy Elliott back in like 2002 had one.
That's crazy.
Yeah, man. So we already talked about it, so we're going to move on to the next one. Mark, I got bad news.
Okay.
It's Post Malone.
Wow, what? He's got another thing?
He's got another one.
This is terrible news.
Yeah. Debut at number two. Song is Rockstar by Post Malone.
Oh, God, of course. Of course. You didn't have to tell me that, Charlie. I could have guessed he wrote a song called Rockstar. I could have come to that conclusion on my own.
Yeah. I'll admit that I'm a little upset because that tune 1-800-273-8255 was up at number three last week, but it dropped quite a bit this week to number four. So we won't be able to talk about that. I'd like to have a conversation about that song because I think it's worth having a conversation about. Post Malone, I think, is not.
Oh God, this is a tragedy. This is a travesty. In fact, I can't believe this.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, Portugal the Man's in the top 10 with Feel It Still.
That's kind of odd.
Did you ever think you'd see the day when Portugal the Man cracks the Billboard?
Yeah, I actually didn't know that they cracked it at all, let alone this far. Didn't the album come out a while ago?
I think so.
Wow.
But you know how pop music works.
No, I have no idea.
Nothing is released until you hear it on the radio.
Nothing matters.
All right, so... That was quite a conversation, but a worthwhile one to have. And thanks for sitting down and talking Taylor with me, Mark. I appreciate that.
Always down to talk some Tay, my friend.
Talking Tay. Next week, we got the EP roundup of Young Thug, Unknowny, and Alice Glass. And, of course, we'll have our full thoughts on the latest Post Malone single to reach the Billboard Hot 100. Sure to be a riveting conversation for all folks involved. Check us out on the social medias in the meantime. Do your duty to your podcast, subscribe to us, get us in your feeds, share us like a virus with your friends, infect everyone you care about. That's the only way to keep music safe.
And that is a civic responsibility as citizens of the world. We must keep music safe.
We must protect it from those who seek to defile music.
Such as Post Malone. I want to live
Lock
in a pre-Malone era.
Lock him up.
God.
Lock him up.
I don't know how I feel about that joke, but okay.
Okay. Well, that's where we're going to end the show. How do you feel about that?
Oh, real bad. Real bad. I feel bad okay. In general.
Well,
bad and bougie.
You have one chance to resurrect the show and save it.
It's established! Isn't that what Mercy says?
Is that
never
Mercy?
Watched it.
Okay, we're ending it there. I can't wait. See you next week for the EP Roundup and Post Malone. Until next time. Play that outro music!
Talking to God. I thought that this would all work out after a while. Now you're saying that I'm asking for too much attention. Also, no other faith is light enough for this place. We said we'd only die of lonely. The system only dreams in total darkness. Why are you hiding from me? We're in a different kind of thing now. All night you're talking to God.
Play that outro music.